CliffCentral.com.
It's the weekend, baby!
Yeah, Friday.
Hooray!
I know you've been waiting for this all week.
It's the warmest Friday in like 5 months.
I know, isn't it great? Isn't it nice, Could do with some of this.
Because, you know, obviously being in the Southern Hemisphere here, whenever we watch things on TV or online, whatever, people are experiencing summer when we're at our coldest.
I know.
And like the months of May, June, like they're quite hard to kind of fathom sometimes. And then we get to August, September, and everyone's like bringing back their winter uniforms.
Yeah.
And there's us going, 8 months, bitches.
I do love, like, in some ways this is the best and the worst of times, because the birthday is coming up, which I loathe and despise, but then September is the September, October, November, December, best months without any, I mean, that's 4 whole months that I love, so I'll survive through the last little ass end of August.
They just all meld into one.
To me, it does, yeah.
Long party.
It is the greatest.
Yeah, they're the Friday of the months.
Yes, exactly. And it's a long one. I mean, like 4 months is almost a full third of the year, you know? You think about it. And as a result, it's my favorite part of the year. And I'm just happy. I'm just naturally, my already pretty good brain chemistry starts taking an even better turn for the sunny uplands. Love it.
Someone poked me up last week. They asked me what I was doing for December.
I know. You get asked
thinking, all right, it's that time of the year
now. I have not considered any of that stuff, so I'm a little bit nervous to even think about it.
Oh, it will creep up on you.
It will. But listen, I mean, I know that for a lot of people, this is also, it's very trying at the moment, you know, financially and all the rest of it, because it really is tough out there. There are loads of people. I've had friends of mine, mostly acquaintances, but some friends saying to me, hey, listen, do you know of any jobs? Which is never a good sign. It means that either they've been laid off or they're looking for something new, because what they're doing at the moment isn't covering the costs. You know how it goes. Mm. So I think there are a lot of people struggling out there. When first-hand information comes to you like that, I'm talking over the last 4 months of probably about 6 or 7 people who I know who've been looking for work and are struggling to find it. And not incapable people, by the way. So it's tough. But there is, you know, there's that promise of like what's coming, the summer. And it hasn't been the worst year in South African history. It by no means, thanks to politicians, has been the best. But we were kind of hoping for more from the politicians, because Jacob Zuma left us on Valentine's Day, and we thought things would...
That was the greatest love
I know, but,
act.
But wouldn't it have been even greater if what had happened afterwards had been tremendous? If someone had come in the way of so many expectations of Cyril Ramaphosa and just delivered, like, accountability and all of those things. But I don't want to talk politics. It's Friday. We're going to do some fun things today. We've got our experiential Fridays, which, of course, every week involve us doing something a little different. We've done Hubblies, we've done hot sauce, we've done, what did we do? Drinking Mampur. So we're gonna take things in different directions every Friday, and hopefully you get to share in the fun. Plus, we'll put up some video, and then you can see what goes on in the studio. So it gives you something to look at, not just us. Some interesting stuff.
Yeah, this morning is a little easier.
Yeah, today we're doing ice cream.
It's always one thing when we do this in studio and we have some fun like Mampur, but then the rest of the day is a bit of a...
it's a bit of a disaster when you're trying to actually be productive, yeah. You know?
So ice cream to me is just like an ordinary breakfast.
Yeah, you don't mind. But this is, it's going to be that homemade ice cream, Paul's homemade ice cream, which is fantastic.
That's so good. You know, they've got an actual place you can go to in Parkhurst.
Yes.
Yeah, they have different stores. Yeah,
that's the business.
So much to do today. Let's get stuck into it. We have some emails that I wanted to get to yesterday. Never had a chance to. So, first of all, this is from someone in Tokyo. It says, messages are not delivering in WhatsApp. So here are the two that I wanted to send you. Greetings from Tokyo. The strikes in Japan are the most polite strikes you will ever see. They even apologize for any inconvenience. And strikes normally happen before work or during lunchtime.
Oh.
What a great country. And then he says, or she says, I want to complain. My daughter was born in Japan. It took Home Affairs 6 months to give her all the documents she needs. So we're stuck in Japan until then. Other countries take 1 week to issue all the certificates and passports. Guess how long Japan takes?
I'm thinking same day.
Same day. They take 1 day. See, that's amazing. Wow. That's just efficiency. I love it.
But then on the other side of the scale, those strikes that are beyond peaceful and efficient and they apologize doesn't really make much of an impact.
Well, it does, clearly, because otherwise it wouldn't be doing it over and over again. You know, the problem with our strikes in South Africa is they very seldom achieve anything. So what irritates me here is that you've got strikes, but no resolution to the strikes. So the strikes end up being pointless, but it's the only way people know how to complain.
Mm.
So we've got to come up with a better system. It seems Japan's strikes have the desired effect. Otherwise, they would last for days and days and days and days and days as well. They resolved instant.
I'm being very simple about it, but here we dance and chant and, you know, it's anger.
In Japan, they'd be like, excuse me, take off lunch.
Sorry, may I please go past you as I strike?
Yeah, I'm trying
to make an impact.
Right, I'm not going to go to the canteen today.
Yes.
Well, we saw that bus strike where they just didn't take money. They just drove.
No.
Here, what happened? Buses get burned. Everyone's lives gets fucked.
Yeah. So. No, it's a real disaster. I mean,
that's a reflection of the kind of people.
The Gautrain stations have, I don't know how operable they are now, but I was going to use them when I went to the airport the other day. And when I came back, I thought, no, it's probably just too dangerous. Because what if I miss the train, or what if there's only one train, or what if they're only operating at peak hours?
Mm.
Then I'm late for my flight, so I just decided I'd Uber instead. So they'll lose the money. You know, ultimately, people will make other plans. This is what, you know, there are other options these days, even in monopolies. More and more people I know are getting solar. More and more people I know are digging their own boreholes. More and more people I know are so free of the state. They don't actually need them at all.
Mm.
And the government might not even know these people exist in some cases. They might be undocumented. They may not wish to renew their documents. They're living in this country, but you wouldn't find them in a database. Wow. Interesting, huh? Mm. Yeah, and there are a lot of people who want to do that. They want to get off the system. I think it sounds pretty damn fine to be off the system, if you ask me. So, a couple other things. Sure, where do we begin? Oh, I saw this video. Someone's been sending this around on WhatsApp of this dude who started Ibiza. Ben, you saw this, right?
Well, he went and started a hotel in Ibiza, Pike's Hotel.
Pike, that's his name. And he is...
This was like back in the days where moustaches were mandatory.
What an interesting dude, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just the most interesting guy. So
the first time I heard about this guy was in Freddie Mercury's autobiography, which I read a couple of years ago.
Right, because
Freddie and his mates used to go and party in Ibiza back when it was still like a small, sleepy little town.
Yeah, this Thomas Pike hosted Freddie, he hosted Julio Iglesias, all these Lotharios, you know, these people who had like 2,000 affairs with 2,000 people at the same time.
It was a very high sex work ethic in those days.
The sex work was very, very prolific.
They were dedicated. Nowadays, people are aloof. Bieber's getting married at 24. That's not a work ethic.
That's so boring.
That's not a sexual work ethic at all.
If you're gonna be a rock star, then be a rock star. Put it to a bunch of
people. All right, guys, choose what you want. Then on the other side of the scale, he starts sleeping around, and then you say,
no,
oh, that's
yeah, you've got to set, me you've got to set the example.
Oh.
So listen to this guy. Trust me, you'll find this guy fascinating. Right?
All consensual, of course.
No, in the mid-80s, people wouldn't say, do you want a drink? They say, do you want a line? And along this fucking bar, it'd be all lines of cocaine.
Tony Pike. All lines of cocaine.
Hotel in Ibiza, Pike's Hotel. I would say this hotel became a scene of hedonism.
He's an iconic personality in Ibiza, right? He's still alive. People were naked. He had a reputation for wild parties involving drugs and sex. And his biography is called Mr. Pike's.
Ibiza was an island where you could come to and be yourself. There was no rules and regulations. You come here and you find your inner self. I found my inner Pike. All of this I built over a 20-year period. This is the main way to the tennis court. Freddie used to play tennis here with me.
That's Freddie Mercury.
Freddie became a regular visitor. That room there is called Julio's Aces Suite, Julio's. So Freddie said to me, is it called Julio's? I said, well, it's named after the international singing star. He said, but Pike, what about me? I said, well, you keep singing, Freddie. I'm not making any promises, but maybe one day I'll put your name on something. We've done the back. We call it Freddie's Bar.
Freddie's Bar.
This was my room here when I was married. I was dating Grace Jones, and I went out with Grace, and we came back at night. It was all dark, and everybody's in bed. So we walked along this path here from the tennis court, and all the gowns were strewn in the shrubs.
Do you understand what he's saying?
He was married to Grace Jones.
No, he was married to someone, but he was banging Grace Jones.
Oh, excuse me.
And Grace Jones, all her clothes were strewn all over the bushes. And so she said,
this is a limit, Tony. Who's done this? I said, well, my wife, because he's just having an affair. Grace Jones is the best fuck I've ever had in my life. She had so much energy. Boy, did.
How old are you now?
83.
Says 83 is reminiscing about having sex with Grace Jones. He says she was the best fuck of my life.
I love
Grace
that
Jones
he...
was. Have you seen what Grace Jones looked like at the height of her powers?
Yeah. I love that he can't even find the proper words for it. He just laughs because that's when you know that like memories are running through his head. Yeah. Crazy stories.
Listen to this.
I've slept with in excess of 3,000 people. I'm a sex addict, but I'm not ashamed of it. I was diagnosed with a double aorta, and what it meant was I was pumping 2 litres extra. The average man says it's you, it's pumping 5 litres a minute. I was pumping 7. Where the extra 2 litres go? Into my dick.
All right, so his thinking here is that he had a double aorta, so he's pumping more blood around his body than the rest of us. 2 litres more, he says, and where do you think that extra 2 litres went? To his dick. Right? I mean, the guy's beast. This is fascinating.
So it wasn't my fault. I fucking, big fucking cock, get down here. Bastard, get out. Don't answer me back, get out. And, but they come up again, see? They call me the fucking machine.
They call him the fucking machine.
I made love with men. I'm not a gay.
So he made love with men, but he's not a gay.
Made that very clear, he's not a gay.
No, I'm not a gay, but I've made love with men.
It's not gay if it's... Well, Ibiza.
If it's Ibiza, you can do what you want. You didn't know that, Sia.
Oh, no, I need to...
Do whatever
to,
you want there.
Perhaps my life has been confusing life.
Well, he had sex, he says, with over 3,000 people.
Oh, how?
Mm-hmm. You know a guy like that is not inflating the figures.
What a story, huh?
This is where George Michael and Andrew Ridgeley and me in it. Did the Club Tropicana. I was behind the bar, selling the cocktails in the video.
Didn't you have an experience with George?
Sort of. It was a love story between George and I. He was a great, I loved him. Didn't realise he was a star. And so it makes him more of a star. Okay, let's walk this way, folks. Over the years, there've been many stories here, but a lot of them can't be public. You've got to be very careful when you're supplying drugs, but if I said no, they'd leave the hotel. A good example of this, he said, you've got to get me coke, and I'd have to have 5 grams a day, top quality.
So they don't say who this is, but this is some famous person, and they needed 5 grams a day. And he would get them the drugs they needed, and then they'd be at his hotel. All these famous people, Grace Jones, George Michael, he's just fucking them all to pieces. I mean, what a life, right?
I was like, leave it to me. So I thought about it. I went down. I approached the police chief. I said, I want to supply cocaine to one of my guests. What you do, I'll put you in jail. Who is he? Oh, I've heard of. So he said, well, Pike, leave the office. Say no more. So I supplied 5 grams a day.
He goes straight to the police chief. And he says, I got to supply this very famous person with all these drugs. The police chief is like, well, shit, if it's him or her. Sure, go ahead. You know, what a guy.
One night, I was at the bar here. I turned around. There's a girl sitting there. and very, very attractive. And the man said, you know, that is Mr. Pike. I said, no, that's Pepper from Salt and Pepper. Mm. I thought, I've got to get some Coke. Racked up two lines. I hoovered it down. As soon as I took it, it was ketamine. Pepper was there, and she said, Tony, I'm so sorry this happened. I said, baby, I'm suffering very badly, darling. I've just done bloody ketamine. I said, I'm in the KL.
Ketamine.
Can't even know. It was a lovely, lovely girl. She's Australian, of course. And so I really fancied her. I said, look, baby, I've got a boat in the harbour. Why don't we go on the boat away from prying eyes? And so we went off on the boat, and we spent 5 days just cruising around. We weren't intimate, but we had a lovely, lovely time.
Poor Kylie. Can you imagine him being on the ship? Well, mind you, this guy sounds like a party man.
Well, he was charismatic.
Yeah, maybe Kylie really liked being with him on the boat. Hey, I mean, baby, she wouldn't have stayed, right?
Mm. But just think, like, back then, you go to a place as mythical as Ibiza, and this guy's like the mayor of the town.
Yeah, he's the king of hedonism.
Yeah. So he'll always have a lure about him.
Wow.
We weren't intimate, but we had a lovely, lovely time, and I would never say a bad thing about her.
Hmm.
I live a dangerous life. Key to happiness, in my opinion, is total freedom.
Hmm.
I'm nobody special, but I'm different.
I think you are pretty special, to be perfectly honest. What a guy, huh?
So he's got a book released last year called Pike's Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Pike's. And he was talking about George Michael, obviously. The Club Tropicana music video by Wham was shot at the hotel. So
if
you watch that music video, as it starts, there's a guy shaking cocktails who looks quite shifty. That's Mr. Pike. That's him. But back then, George Michael's sexuality was a bit of a secret. You watch that music video and you think, how the hell was it?
But George Michael was bisexual, right? So he was into girls and guys.
But back then, people only thought he was into girls. And they were sitting by the pool one day, and he said, you know what, George, you're such a good-looking cunt. You must pull so many women. It's an extract from his book. And he said, no, I'm actually gay. And he's like, oh, what a fucking waste.
Mr. Pike.
So these are the kinds of things you'll see in this book.
What a fucking waste.
It's just great because that was all his life was. It was just partying and it was a freedom. And back then it was just so different. Now with like smartphones and everything, you can't keep secrets.
No, it's amazing.
So like Queen and all these, they'll pull in for like a week.
I mean, this is in the 80s. There were real celebrities at that
early
stage.
Early 80s, you know? Yeah.
Some serious celebrities. I mean, by comparison with the people who are around now. There he is, there's Puck. In Club Tropicana. They filmed it in the place.
In his pool, yeah.
Amazing. How could anyone not know that George Michael was, you know? I mean, see, come on.
Yeah, back then, everyone
Stevie
was quite naive.
Stevie Wonder could see that. Let's just call a thing a thing here.
I love the way he says to him, what a waste.
What a song.
Yeah, it's a good song. They're a good band.
I want to read this book. I think it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, it's like Dr. Dre's book, which is just full of like stuff that you don't know about the celebrities, right? I mean, if you're really interested in that stuff, these are the books to read.
Mm. But I often wonder, so this guy who slept with 3,000 people, but he's not a gay, like, you've got to be depressed now. He's 83, okay? All his friends are dead. They either died of AIDS, too many drugs, or just they just died.
Well, some of them are probably still alive.
Well,
he's now partying with the new 20-year-olds.
But it's not the same, Gareth. Because these new 20-year-olds aren't as much fun. And life's very different. And as you get older, you don't quite adapt like you used to. This guy's different, like you said. But it's got to be depressing. Like, you watch him now. I saw another interview with him, which was just very sad. Well, mostly because the interview was just dreadful. But it's just, like, you can understand why people commit suicide in life. Because you have such an incredible high. Such an incredible way of living. And now you're thinking, oh, am I going to piss now? Or is it my prostrate swollen again?
Oh. Well, he's in this video that we just played audio from. He's walking around with his cats. He's chilling. He's probably still got a good life. He's probably made a lot of money.
He's got a life.
Mm.
For him, it was never about the money.
Okay, but think about other 83 or 84-year-olds. Sure. I mean, he's already, just by orders of magnitude, happier than them because he's had these experiences. You know, when you get old, you've got to have a bank of memories to fuel you. Like, that becomes your reason to smile. You wake up in the morning, you're like, God, I remember that day when, you know, I was with Grace Jones and we were we were rolling in the hay and there was all her clothing lying around because my wife had found out. I mean, that's a and you meet anyone you meet from a 20-year-old to another 80-year-old, you tell them these stories and they go, oh, they're in awe.
But that's what he does. So he hosts dinner parties still to this day. You can go stay there and he will be your host.
Oh.
And he's got
a book a holiday now.
He's got an Arab wife.
Yeah.
With a child with her. So he's trying to bring the child up Western, but at the same time appreciate his Arab culture. So he's got that going as well.
Fascinating.
But yeah, he's just such an interesting guy. But that whole thing about you get to that stage where you can't party anymore. So he must have been, his 50s must have been really rocky because you can't take drugs like you used to. Your body just goes, no, I'm sorry, I can't. Mm. If he has a line of ketamine now, he's dead.
Oh, he's dead.
He's dead. So then,
but what a way to go.
But then, like, you've got to reinvent yourself completely because you can't do the substances anymore.
I think that you find new things to do. Like, sure. I think also that the men reach
helps
a point.
Having cats as well.
Men reach a point. Thank God we reach a point. Some guys reach it earlier in life, other guys later, where you're not just driven by lust and consumption and the need to achieve and to compete with everybody else. And, you know, eventually you grow up. I mean, it might be in your 80s, but eventually it happens. And when this guy eventually gets there, whether he's there or not now, I think he probably is, because probably, you know, the equipment isn't working as well as it used to, then you have the chance to be quite sage about your life, and you look back on it. And I don't think he has a sense of, I mean, he wouldn't have written this book, for example, if he didn't have stories to tell and he wasn't proud of them.
Yeah, he's got endless stories, just the ones he can tell.
God, like, can you imagine the ones he can't?
But like Julio Iglesias said to him one day, you know, Pike, I admire your life. Everything about your life I admire. He's like, well, Julio, you're a multimillionaire. Mm. Everyone knows you're around the world. You're a complete and utter success. You've got a private jet in the hotel, in the airport. I've got a bike. Like, yeah, but look what you've done. You don't worry about anything. You don't have to fear anything in life. You don't have to be anybody but yourself.
Well, there's a line that he said in the end of that interview, which I thought was very instructive, that for him, the key to happiness is total freedom.
Yeah.
Now, how many of us can say that we're totally free? Isn't that something to aspire to?
It's interesting. That's what Tina Turner said on one of the interviews straight after her final tour.
Really?
She says, that is what I want.
Wow.
Freedom.
Wow.
To be able to wake up and you decide for yourself what to do with the day. If you let that sink in, it might like make you feel some sort of sad way because wow. You realize a lot of us don't really have much option in terms of what we do with the day because we have to go to work because we need the money because we need to pay off bills and things. But to wake up and go, you know what? I'm going to spend the day in bed. I'm not going
to
leave.
Yeah, or I'm going to fly to Ibiza and party with Tony.
Total freedom.
Yeah.
Another great thing about this guy, and you see stories like him, he just reminds you of the simplicity of life.
Uh-huh.
You know, like he's got many pearls of wisdom throughout this book as well, you know, like marriage as well. So he had this whole thing that husbands can be very attentive and think they're providing for their wives, but ultimately they aren't giving them what they need and want, which is good basic sex.
Yeah.
Every woman wants to be fucked, and our secret is our secret. So basically, married woman would get to this place, Tony would give him a good seeing to. And he said, I don't go around running my mouth off afterwards. You know, he's a gentleman about it, but he was all about basic needs and happiness. His whole thing is about, he always wanted to provide happiness. The hotel he built over 20 years to what it looks like now, and he started with very little. He literally got to the island and he wanted to just, I don't know, have a look.
This is like the Club 54 of Europe, effectively. That's what it is. Only it was like a holiday spot, not just a night spot. Because you remember what 54 in New York was. To all
where
those people.
Brooke Shields would go, Michael Jackson
would
go, Studio 54.
Right, and there was just drugs, sex, and rock and roll, the height of hedonism. And this guy was running the European wing, basically. Wow, what a life. I mean, we all imagine, like, I'm not the world's biggest party animal. I know people who are way, way more into that than I am. But Jesus, this is an alluring thing. Isn't it? Don't you just want to go?
Sure.
Back in time, obviously, and at the height of its fame. To be there, you'd never know who you'd bump into at the pool. You don't know who you'd end up going out with that night. I mean, I was in the harbor at Monte Carlo like 5 days ago, which sounds so glamorous, and it was because there was a fireworks display, and it was just absolutely incredible. Who's that? Grace Jones.
If you go on to pikesibiza.com, it's the actual website for the hotel, and there's pictures of him. So like, there's him with Freddie Mercury, him and Grace Jones. And then, it's been rated as one of the top 100 best hotels in the world by the Sunday Times Traveler.
All right. So as I was saying, I was in this harbor at Monte Carlo, and I was watching these fireworks, and I was looking across with a pair of binoculars at the you know, there's a little strip. It goes from the Institut Oceanographique up to the Royal Palace, where prisoner Charlene lives, all the way down into, you know, the harbor. You've got all these yachts, and some of them, I mean, we saw the fourth biggest yacht in the world there. It's something called the Dilbar. It's owned by some Russian oligarch. But it's huge. Huge! Look it up. You'll see what I mean. Dilbar. Jesus. This thing is, it's a ship. We were on a cruise liner that takes 900 passengers. This thing was just a little bit smaller than us.
They call it a yacht.
It's a mega yacht.
$600 million US dollars.
Mm-hmm. So then I look across, and there's a famous club called Jimmy's, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is like Jimmy's with a Z. The most famous club in the south of France, or in Monte Carlo, or in, you know, it's on the Riviera. It's like, this is where everybody who had any money, any fame, any cachet at all would go for their holidays. I don't know if it's still like that. It must still be, because the bills are extraordinarily high. You order a drink there, and it's 200 euros before you even know what's going on. Anyway, we didn't go to the club, but I looked at this across the bay, and I thought, can you imagine those walls could talk? Imagine the people that they've seen there. From, like, you know, Princess Caroline of Monaco. You know, all these glamorous people. Those big movie stars of the 1960s and 70s who would party there when it became the place to go.
Yeah.
Jesus, I mean, it's just, you think about that world and you think, what an incredible time. No social media. So no one's, there's no recording. There's no picture. Like, you had to have cameras, and they wouldn't allow cameras into these places. That's how much fun they were. That people who were important and famous didn't have to worry, because there were no ways that people would find out what you were up to, what drugs you were doing, what you were drinking, who you were sleeping with. Nobody's business. You could just go and party, and you wouldn't be partying with just anybody. For all you know, could end up ordering a drink at the bar, and the next thing you know, you're tongue deep into the Princess of England. You don't know.
And you wouldn't care, because tomorrow you're on to the next
some
one.
Some movie star from Hollywood who's just entered the, you know, the big leagues. You don't know. You don't know who these people are. It's incredible. I mean, that is absolutely, like, the sexiest thing, right? It just, wow. And this Tony, what a guy. So there he is, the emperor of hedonism. A couple of news stories, because it's 6:30 already. Got to get into the five things you need to know. Simon Cowell is going to receive a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I only mention this because now every douchebag in the world is getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, so why shouldn't the biggest douchebag of them all get one? Simon Cowell will be honored in the landmark accolade as he's recognized in the TV category for his longstanding services to the industry. Any comments?
Well, hope it doesn't get trashed, because now if people hate you, they go to your star.
You heard what happened with Trump's star, right? Because
mm-hmm.
Trump's star was vandalized by somebody. So now there are 6 Trump stars. I don't know.
In
all in one, like, block. 3 and 3.
Come on.
Yeah, look it up.
I thought it was really funny how some guys dressed up like Russian soldiers to go protect it.
So funny. So Simon Cowell has now got one. So really, I mean, honestly, it's a hop, skip, and a jump. And, you know, what's her name? Skolopat will have one soon.
How is she doing, by the way?
No idea. Cyril Ramaphosa has declared in a special official funeral for Masubukwe. Veronica Sobukwe, the wife of the late Pan-African Congress founder Robert Mangaluso Sobukwe. How old was she? She died at 91 in Graaf-Reinet in the Eastern Cape. You know what I love about government is that they always, like, suddenly when someone dies, they take a huge interest. It's kind of like what's happening now with Aretha Franklin. You know, God rest her soul. That really was a loss to the world. And I'm not saying Masubukwe wasn't. But, you know, the government suddenly like, oh, we've got to give her a special official funeral. I'll bet you she wasn't living in great circumstances in Graaf-Reinet. No one does. Graaf-Reinet's a toilet. And I know there are some pretty buildings and churches there, but that's about it. There's nothing else there. It's in the middle of the Karoo. It's a dreary, one-horse town. It's nightmarish. And this poor woman was probably on the bones of her backside, eking out an existence. She managed to make it to 91 years old. Her husband was treated horrifically by the former regime, and his memory not so well by the current regime. And now they're all like, oh, we got to give her a great big funeral. Trying to almost cleanse their soul, you know, over Masobukwe. So there we go. I mean, rest in peace, ma'am. You know, your husband's sacrifice, dying on Robben Island, founding a movement that in some ways was superior to intellectually any of the movements created at the same time. I just think, I think that it's always too little too late. That's how I feel about these things. And speaking of too little too late, I mean, Aretha Franklin died yesterday afternoon, and we'll do a little tribute at 7 o'clock. And I got Randall Abrams popping by to give us his, you know, he's the authority on these things. He knows more
really
about
it. He'll know more than like family members of these people.
I always, whenever I have a question about music, I call Randall up, and he knows. He just knows. He reads more music biographies. He has information you won't even find on the internet is how much he knows. He's one of those people who, when he gets into an artist, he gets into every aspect of them. He can tell you what date and time and studio they recorded their number one hits in. He's an absolute mine of information. And with someone like Aretha, I couldn't do it justice because I'm a massive, massive fan. But I don't know as much as someone like Randall. So I thought, let's get him in, and he can probably give us the best possible overview of this incredible woman, the Queen of Soul's life. So we'll talk about her in a little while. The Kango Caves reports almost 1 million rand profit over 2017-18 financial year. This Brilliant. Is a big thing because that municipal entity, which has suffered severe losses since 2013, is suddenly making money, which worries me a little bit because it means that, you know, the politicians are going to try and squeeze every drop of blood out of that place because it's a national, in fact, an international treasure. The Kango Caves, if you've never been before. The Western Cape Provincial Parliament revealed the site suffered a loss of over 850,000 rand in the 2013-14 financial year. And during the following financial year, it registered losses of more than 2.9 million rand. But suddenly, it seems they're running it well. And they've now got an increase in international visitors. And on our account, the 60% of the total number of tourists in the area has gone up. Ultimately, the people of Oudtshoorn are the victors in the good news around this story. Isn't that nice?
How about that, Gareth?
There's something positive.
With all our natural resources, we just have to be not shit.
Yeah, just don't be shit and let people see the caves.
Just to look at caves, we're uplifting a town. Just imagine if you could do other things,
mm-hmm.
like nice toilets.
Then also in the Western Cape, George, you know that place where you've got a lot of white people who've had sex with their cousins.
Oh,
no, that's not.
Isn't it true?
That's Onrust.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
No, Onrust. If you're listening from Onrust, out of nowhere, it's like, hey.
We are making enemies from all of these little towns.
All right, well, let's leave George alone, but more than 20
George
people.
George is amazing.
More than 20 people have been arrested in charges of public violence in connection with an ongoing taxi protest in George. So they just arrested people, you know, members of the public. Protesting drivers also gathered at the Go George bus depot earlier on Thursday. They embarked in a strike over the past few days, and their grievances include the impounding of taxis, among others. Okay, so it's mostly taxi drivers, but the people in George seem to be on the side of the taxi protesters, according to this article anyway, on EWN. And then you've got this situation where the police are just taking no shit, so they arrested 20 people, put them in jail. The George municipality's Deborah Sauer says the demonstration has impacted the Go George bus service. Well, we were talking about strikes earlier, so there we go. It's another example of how that happens. And finally, just to get you a little bit nervous, an outbreak suspected of killing 43 people is spreading across the lush farmlands of the eastern Congo, where ethnic and military conflicts threaten to hobble containment efforts. Guess what?
Ebola?
Yep, that's what they say. A mobile blood testing lab, hand-washing stations on street corners, motorcycle taxi drivers forbidden from sharing spare helmets. If Ebola is coming, the city of Goma in eastern Congo wants to be ready. An outbreak is suspected of already killing 43 people, and Goma, a lakeside city of more than 1 million people near the Rwandan border, is more than 350 kilometers south of the epicenter of the outbreak in the town of Mangina in the North Kivu province, and no cases have been confirmed there. But the virus has already spread to neighboring Ituri province, and the number of infected is rising daily. Residents in the busy trading hub are taking no chances. So people, they've been through this before. They're not going to sit and wait. Sit on their hands. That they're not sharing helmets. They're keeping their hands clean. They're making sure that they cover their faces. You know, whatever you can do. You don't want to get Ebola. Trust me. It's got to be one of the scariest things that's around in terms of viral and bacterial problems that exist. This one's certainly viral. And then I just thought this would be quite a cool tribute. Maybe we'll save it for 7 o'clock. Aretha Franklin. Maybe we'll just save that for when we get Randall on. Okay, Bitcoin, $6,509. That's good news. $301 for Ethereum. It's not great, but it's better than it was 2 days ago. Ben, what do you have for us in the sport?
Well, we've got the box shaping up against Argentina. We've got the ICC not knowing the difference between Kaki Sarabada or Lungi Ngidi. And lots of Premier League action to look forward to. All right, the Bucks named a pretty good-looking team for the weekend. Vili Leroux will play fullback, Marcos Olimpimpi. Now, he's been given the go ahead of Luazio Mvova, which is a good thing.
Sorry.
What's that? Yeah?
What's his name?
Marcos Olimpimpi.
Mpimpi. M-P-I-M-P-I.
M-A-P-I-M-P-I. This sounds like a P-D-D song.
Mpimpi.
Mpimpi. Yeah, so Mpimpi.
Why are you laughing, though? What is Mpimpi?
Mpimpi is a traitor. I don't know what a mumpimpi is, but
mumpimpi.
It just sounds very odd. Okay. Well, mumpimpi.
Hopefully it means try scorer because he's getting the nod at number 14. So there was talk that Luazi and Volvo might come back, but I mean, he's never really done much at international level. He got young stars, and I believe if the guy's got talented enough, always pick the young guy.
Right.
So it's just me, maybe because I'm always hanging on to my youth. Lucanya Am and Andre Esthazen will share the midfield role. Now, they, of course, do play for the Sharks, which is really great. So, like, there's certain combinations in rugby which I believe always should get together. And if you get a centre pairing, that's going to help the back line no end. Apiwa Janchi, he is through from his hamstring strain, which saw him have a very curtailed role in the Super Rugby final. And then we've got Andre Pollard and Fafta Klerk as your halfback pairing. So that is a solid back line. You'll look at that and go, yeah, but it's a bit green. There's a lot of caps going around there. Sure. Okay. That's a fair point, but it's still a good-looking team. And it also shows there is depth because you can bring a few players back, of course, but that's still a bloody good backline, I believe. Then the loose trio is completely different. Warren Whiteley comes back at number 8 because Dwayne Vermeulen, of course, is contractually obliged to stay at his club at the moment. Sio Kolisi will go to the blindside flank and, of course, be retained as captain. And then Francois Lowe, the old stalwart. I always thought that horrible word. You're a stalwart.
Stalwart.
Anyway, that's what he is. He's number 6, oversized flanker. And although there's not a lot of pace in that sort of loose trio, it's got a good mix to it. I think it's got a good mix to it. Maybe not the lineup options that they want, but still. Speaking of which, Peter Stefanatoi returns to the locks. He's obviously been used a lot as a blindside flanker because of the extra lineup options and depth that he brings there. But he'll be teaming up with Eben Etzebeth, who hasn't played since December the 2nd, but it's Eben. He's throwing black back in the mare. Oh, can't wait to see this guy play again.
All right.
And against Argentina, those Oaks love a bit of argy bargy. So that's probably another reason why Eben has to come back. And then Francois Herbert, sun shines out of this guy's ass, but he also hardly ever plays, but then he'll always just suddenly get picked. We've got some good props in this country, and obviously Francois is one of them, because there he is, number 3. Malcolm Marks, the best hooker in the whole world. And then Tendai, the beast, and Tawarira. So that's a good team. It's a good team. Sure, you would think, like, you know, there's a couple of guys you might want to have in there, but still, it's a good team, and this is an exciting time for SA Rugby. Not just because Alistair Garcia isn't there. It's just that we've got to have faith in these guys, because rugby is still one of the sports that we can get excited about, and Oaks still get together and watch.
Oaks.
Yeah.
Oaks, you're ready, eh?
And the Bennetts.
Yeah.
Bongi Mbanambi, Stephen Kitsoff, Thomas Tatoya, Marvin Ori, Marco van Staden, those are your forward backups, and then Embro's Papia, Lionel Mapu, and then Damien Willems, the young standout star from the Stormers. Look at that. Young guy. Like, seriously, he's like a young guy. He's like, younger than Sia. He's there. Dynamic guy. Which means that Elton Janchi's, of course, not in the match day 23. And that will be okay for now. 5:05 kickoff in Durban. Durban people, you've been lackluster the last few years watching rugby. Just go there.
This always happens. Durban gets all upset because it never gets anything, but they never pitch. They never come in their droves.
I mean, I get it. Like, you don't want to go to Durban if you live on the North Coast and you're a nice gated estate. I get it. But we've got to support live sport. Maybe we don't, but still, just go and have a draw. I mean, it's spring. It's a cool vibe. I think you can drink in the fields again. I
know there's a vibe. See, I talk like you're from Durban.
Yeah, it's a vibe. Fish.
Yeah, exactly.
Fish.
I'm pretty sure you can drink in the fields again prior and after the match.
I know, like, car bar, dude.
Yeah. So yeah, get involved. Get in the mix. Cricket. Yeah. So Otis Gibson said, look, we're not very good at playing spin. Some guys are, some guys aren't. But the important thing is that at least they're trying to be attacking. I mean, also sing from the same song sheet here. But the ICC, they tweeted a picture talking about Rabada and unfortunately posted a picture of Ngidi.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So they don't know the difference, huh? All blacks look the same to them.
Yeah.
Fucking racists.
Yeah. In actual cricket action this weekend, England will take on India again. And as Indians, well, they'll be lackluster at best, I'm sure. Ben Stokes, who's not an affrayer, allegedly. I don't know. That old story I thought was a pile of bollocks, really. The guy clearly wasn't acting in self-defense. He was just blixing oaks like a butt outside of a club. So he will be back. And so that starts tomorrow, Saturday. There's another story. This is actually making news in cricket right now.
Mm-hmm.
AB de Villiers has no regrets about leaving unbearable pressure behind. No shit. That's a story. That's an actual story at the moment. People are asking AB, so AB, how do you feel about retiring? AB's like, I feel great. I've got so much money, I don't have to worry about putting a ball box in every 5 minutes. I'm happy. Of course the guy's happy. Jeepers. It's a slow week in cricket if that makes the news. In football, the weekend, we'll see Premier League action and lots of it. So there's no Friday game this week, but tomorrow. If you're a big Cardiff City fan, well, there we go. Newcastle United opening match in Wales, 1:30. Leicester will take on Wolves. Wolverhampton Wanderers. Everton will take on Southampton. West Ham versus Bournemouth. Spurs versus Fulham. And that's all at 4 o'clock South African time. And then, geez, Arsenal got a rocketing start to the season. They awaited Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. That'll be at 6:30. Don't expect Arsenal to win that one. Then Sunday, Burnley Watford, 2:30. Man City versus Huddersfield. Never say that.
Huddersfield.
Also 2:30. And then Brighton, Hove and Albion. Let's go with Brighton. They are taking on Man United at 5 o'clock. Now, I know there's always rumours around Man United, always big rumours around the big teams, but this whole story about Mourinho and Pogba having a bust-up on the training field, and of course, Pogba left Man United, I think it was back in 2012, he went to Juventus, he wasn't happy there, and he had a bit of a bitch, and off he went. So Mourinho's kind of like taunting him, saying, look, hand in a transfer request if you want to leave, just go ahead. And then Pogba was saying, don't talk to me, talk to my agents, blah, blah, blah.
Pogba, don't preach.
Just I'm children.
I'm in trouble deep, sorry.
Yeah, just children. Mourinho made him the captain. He's been saying nice things about him, but Pogba's just these two maybe don't see eye to eye. So that'll be a big story. And of course, when they play, you'll be looking for interaction between the two of them. There's also the PSL, which is in South Africa, and that'll be taking place Friday night, tonight. Tonight is the 17th, right?
Today is the 17th, yes.
Yes. 8 o'clock tonight.
You got this calendar, Ben.
Maritzburg United versus Kaizer Chiefs. Chiefs have, looking for a win there, no doubt. Polokwane City versus Brocker at 3. Cape Town City versus Golden Arrows at 6. Chipper versus Black Leopards at 8:15. And then Wits, high-flying Wits. I know it's only been 3 games, but still top of the log. They'll take on Supersport United at 8:15. And then Sunday, there's action 2. AmaZulu versus Free State Stars at 3. And Bloem Celtic versus Pirates at 3. So that's your big weekend. Rugby starting out. Rugby Championships. We've got New Zealand versus Australia at 12:05. Then get the braai ready by 5:05. Be ready for SA versus Argentina. And then there'll be cricket, test cricket in the background. There'll be the Wyndham Championship on the USPGA Tour. Mm-hmm. Brant Snedeker shot 59 yesterday.
Who?
59, Brant Snedeker. His first hole was a bogey. He then went on to blitz the course. So he's wanted to join the exclusive sub-60 club.
Okay.
And then there's the Nordea Masters on the European Tour. So they're playing in Scandinavia's. I think that's... that's your sport for the week. It's been great to bring it to you.
Thank you, Ben.
I hope you enjoy it. As of next week, more features. If you go onto cliffcentral.com, you go onto the Bounce Pod, which is under Gareth's features, you'll see the whole page where all the podcasts stack up day after day. So you get the morning podcast, as you just heard it right now, plus there'll be feature interviews from next week. got a very interesting rugby chat that's going to come up. So these podcasts will just appear there, and there'll be no more than sort of half an hour.
Great.
I've got some interesting people lined up. So you get
some added value from Ben.
You get to enjoy all of that, yeah.
Great. That sounds good. It's a deal. It's a steal. It's a sale of the fucking century. Oh, don't miss it. Go to cliffcentral.com. All right, over to Sia. What's happening, Sia?
Yay. Well, here's something good that actually came out
so
of.
Excited.
I myself am a good news person, so being able to deliver the good news is even better.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something good that came out of a young girl and her addiction to YouTube and watching these random videos. Do you know how some people keep their pregnancies a secret? We now live in a day and age where they're like shows called "I Didn't Know I Was Pregnant." It's one of those weird situations. Well, listen to this. A 10-year-old girl in Virginia came to the rescue of her aunt and cousin earlier this week, thanks to her adoration for baby dolls. So her name is Chloe, and she was home alone with her aunt when she heard her relative scream from the bathroom and say, "Dum, dum, dum." She's actually giving birth to a baby.
Oh, Jesus.
Now, at first, 10-year-old Chloe didn't believe her. She was overwhelmed by this entire situation because her aunt just got up and said she was going to the loo, and as she sat down on the toilet, she suddenly gave birth. So it's a bizarre, scary, dramatic situation.
I've heard where you have a woman who doesn't know she's pregnant, and the child just falls out of her while she's like bending over to pick up something.
Like in Monty Python. Oh, would you get that one, love?
But wait, it gets scarier because the aunt actually just could only manage taking two steps, and that was to rather go into the bathtub because she was losing so much blood. And the aunt passed out unconscious, leaving the 10-year-old with this newborn baby. And instead of, you know, panicking and freaking out as you would have assumed a 10-year-old would be, she actually kicked into this life-saving mode because firstly, she called 911 instead of rather calling her mother or someone else first. And then 10-year-old Chloe started thinking about all the YouTube videos she watches. Like, she loves watching these YouTube channels around dolls and how to take care of your baby doll. And she literally used the exact same technique on this new baby. So she was able to clean the baby up. She swaddled him. And she even was able to cut the umbilical cord. I wouldn't advise this, but she did with the help of the 911.
She's 10 years old.
10 years old, she was able to do that. With the help of the 911 dispatchers on the phone. By the time paramedics arrived, they said they found 10-year-old Chloe holding onto the baby. They were able to just hand the baby over. She was standing at the front door. She was rocking the baby back and forth very calmly, and the paramedics and the parents of this 10-year-old say that she's extremely brave and they're extremely proud of her. They even let her name the baby, and so now her new cousin's name is Isaac. How about that?
What a special little 10-year-old. First of all, she's going to be a great mother one day.
Oh,
if she's in and of her own right.
And YouTube is good for something, folks.
Yeah, thank goodness. YouTube. Yeah, you're a hero, YouTube.
Hip, hip, hooray!
Oh, bless you.
special treat for a Friday. There we go. Hay fever is in the air. That's good news, though. If I'm sneezing, you know what that means?
What?
It means the blossoms are coming.
Well, back in the day, it wasn't good news.
No, it's not. It's not.
They thought you were dying when you sneezed.
No, it's not a cold. All right. Yeah, I know. They used to think it was the plague. That's where Ringa Ringa Roses comes from.
And bless you comes from.
A tissue, we all fall down. Yeah. You sneeze and then you die.
And then kids sing that nowadays.
I know. They play it on the playground.
What's the one about scurvy?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember. Some pirate song or something. All right. It is almost 7 o'clock. We're going to get into the tribute that we've got Randall Abrams joining us for Aretha Franklin. Sis Re, the Queen of Soul, who died yesterday. And obviously, a lot of people are very sad about this. That I completely understand. Someone, Simba, who listens to us, I posted a tribute to Aretha on my Instagram, and Simba went on and said, "Gone too soon." But he's in on the joke, so he knows that would irritate me. So I obviously had to like his comment. But there we go. So Aretha Franklin died just yesterday, and what a career, what a life, what
advanced
a contribution to music.
Pancreatic cancer.
Well, listen, you know, we all have to go somehow.
Jeez.
And that's not a particularly pleasant way to go, but it seems that, you know, they had warning. people were saying a couple of days ago that she wasn't going to make it. And so much so that even Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, went round. And when Reverend Jesse Jackson comes a knocking, the angel of death can't be far behind. Because he's like the introduction. He's the pre-act to the angel of death. If you are visited by Jesse Jackson, you know shit's coming your way.
Oh, jeez.
Be very careful.
Stay away, Jesse.
You remember
Jackson.
Winnie wasn't even cold and he was already here. Oh, hi, I'm here. I'm here. Hi, I'm Jesse Jackson. Remember that? What a son of a bitch.
Now, I'm not trying to take away from how great Aretha was and her music.
Please
and
don't.
Her talent.
Yeah.
But my major takeaway from Aretha Franklin and all that she's done is the fact that she was one of the people who during interviews really did not mince her words at all towards the end.
No, sure. She said whatever she wanted. Well, you can get away with that. There's an element of they forgive you almost anything and they consider it eccentric. It's sort of like if you're rich.
Mm-hmm.
If you're really, really rich and you sit in a very fancy restaurant and you say, I would like octopus asshole for lunch, please. They'll chase you out of the restaurant, but if you've got billions of dollars, they'll find the octopus arsehole. Trust
and you'll
me.
Be complimented for your eclectic taste.
Yeah, you'll say, oh, well done, sir. You're so interesting. You're so
thinking
different.
About bringing this onto the
yes.
menu for quite some time now.
But if you're Aretha Franklin, you could probably have, especially in her latter years, you could have said anything about anyone in music, and they just have to swallow it.
There was this one particular interview, now that you say that, this interview was asking her about her thoughts on these popular artists, as she says. What do you think of Whitney Houston? And she rattled off an answer. And what do you think of Beyonce? And she rattled off an answer. And the interviewer asked, what do you think of Taylor Swift? And she goes, beautiful gowns, gorgeous gowns. That's
that was her answer,
that's
right?
That's all Taylor
Swift. She's not
Swift
saying anything about
for.
Her singing, yeah.
CliffCentral.com.